Hello once again, everybody, and thank you for joining me in the Bettors Box. It's BangTheBook.com's MLB Betting Podcast for Thursday, August 15th. I'm your host, Adam Burke. This and every edition of the Bettors Box presented by our friends over at DSI Sportsbook. BTB, the number 200 is that promo code, 100% deposit match bonus for the sportsbook, 100% deposit match bonus for the live casino at BetDSI. It's only a game until you bet it. Well, we have been doing the Monday-Thursday format here with the Bettors Box, but with the return of our daily shows beginning on Monday, the Bettors Box will only be on Mondays over the next few weeks before we get into the NFL regular season. After that, it'll be a lot of football on Bang the Book Radio. I'll chat about baseball as I can on the shows, but going forward here, Bettors Box on Mondays before Kyle Hunter on the 27th, or on the 18th, excuse me, the 25th, then also September 1st. After that, we'll be taking a look at the NFL and all the things going on with that on Mondays. So the Bettors Box will be winding down here a little bit. No more Thursday shows, just on Mondays before Kyle Hunter until we get into the NFL regular season. So hopefully you've learned some things here on the Bettors Box over the summertime. Wish the picks and the article had been doing a little bit better, obviously, but lots of thoughts here on the Bettors Box week in and week out. Hopefully you've enjoyed the shows as I've been doing them. Not going away just yet, but going to be scaling it back here a little bit without the Thursday shows. So this is your last Thursday edition of the Bettors Box. So again, the full shows of Bang the Book Radio starting again here on Monday. Bettors Box and Kyle Hunter on Monday. Brian Blessing, Rolf Michaels on Tuesday. On Wednesdays, we'll have Brian Leonard back. Thursdays, we'll have Brad Powers back. Fridays, we'll be doing some different types of things. We'll do some UFC with Christian Pino. We'll do the segment with Brent from DSI Sportsbook, the odds report. Then once we get into the NFL season, we'll be doing our Super Contest segment as well. We're in the Circa Million this year. At least we're going to be in the near future here. Then also the Golden Nugget Ultimate Football Challenge. So very, very busy times right now at BangTheBook.com, on Bang the Book Radio. Tons and tons of stuff going on. I'm going to be updating my college football power ratings here within probably the next week or so. Obviously, we've got games coming up here on August 24th. I've got a preview up for the Florida and Miami game. We'll be writing a preview probably tomorrow for Arizona and Hawaii. So you can check that out over at the website. Week zero opening line report will go up on Monday. Week one opening line report probably late next week. So again, very, very busy time of year. Make sure you catch up on everything that you may have missed over at BangTheBook.com. Danny Vorgs' division-by-division NFL season win total write-ups, where he's got his model spreads. 58% on all picks, sides, and totals for Danny over the last 2 years over at the website. So that's fantastic to check out. NFL preseason game previews going up. About two or three of those a week from me. Also some more from one of our affiliate partners in Charles J. So you can check those out. NASCAR, WNBA, soccer, tennis. Hell, we got everything going on over at BangTheBook.com right now. A great golf preview for this weekend's event from James Mazzola. One more event next week, the Tour Championship. He'll preview that one for us as well. Then the President's Cup, then a little bit of a break from the golf side of things. But still very, very busy. Plenty of content going up on the daily over at BangTheBook.com. I mentioned the Super Contest. I mentioned the Circa Million, which we're going to get in for its inaugural season. Also the Golden Nugget Ultimate Football Challenge. If you want to get into any of those football contests out in Las Vegas, Vegas Maddie over at footballcontest.com should be your proxy for that. He's been our proxy for the last several years. Very reliable, does a fantastic job. Matt and Tony do such great work there with footballcontest.com. Check them out if you want to get involved in those contests and you do not live in the state of Nevada or do not have access to the Westgate app for putting in your Super Contest picks. You have to use a proxy. So Vegas Maddie and Tony over at footballcontest.com are your preferred choice for those upcoming football contests out in Las Vegas. Super Contest weekend coming up. That's a week from Saturday. All the handicappers will be down there at the Superbook. Lots of stuff going on. Of course, you know, checking out the Circa Million, you can sign up for that at the D or at the Golden Gate Casino. But again, if you're not a resident of Nevada and don't have access, Super Contest only. I believe only the Super Contest picks can be put in via the app. So if you're not out in Nevada, it's just easier to get a proxy. Let Vegas Maddie and Tony over at footballcontest.com do that for you. All right, so let's go ahead and go beyond the box score here to start things off. Then we'll go down the lines, give you a couple of picks for tonight's action, and then preview the weekend ahead. So let's go beyond the box score with a look at this Red Sox and Indians series. A lot of questionable decisions for the Indians in this series. Some extremely ill-advised sacrifice bunts, some questionable pitching changes from Terry Francona. The Red Sox had 33 at-bats with a runner in scoring position in this series. The Indians only had 21. Look, this is a tired Indians ball club right now. You know, they kind of rode the wave of taking 3 out of 4 from Minnesota, getting that win on Monday against Boston, the walk-off win with the Carlos Santana home run. After that, you know, they showed some fight in game 2. I give them credit for that. They got buried early on in that game, but just kind of a dud on Wednesday. And this is an Indians team that has had one scheduled off day since the All-Star break. They got an extra off day with a rainout against Texas at home, but then played a doubleheader and then played the 4 games against the Twins. So physically and emotionally drained ball club right now to make a big run in June and July to get back into the race. And then now here in August, you know, playing teams like the Angels, the Astros, the Rangers, the Twins, the Red Sox. Now they take on the Yankees and the Mets, where they're going to stay in the same hotel, playing in the Bronx and in Queens. 7 games over the next 8 days. They do have Monday off, but a very unique situation. You know, in Major League Baseball, you spend 3 or 4 days in a city and you move on. For the Indians here, 8 days in a row, really 9 days in a row, in the same hotel there in New York. So that's a real big challenge, a real different kind of setup for them here this week, playing against the Yankees and the Mets. So this is an Indians team I'd be very worried about here over the next 7 games. They're gassed a little bit. They need a chance to catch their collective breaths. When they get back home after this set of series in New York, they play the Royals. So maybe that's a spot for them to catch a little bit of a breather, give some guys some days off, stuff like that. But keep a very, very close eye on the Indians here over the next week. As far as the Red Sox go, you know, they're still going to hit. Pitching is still a question mark overall. They're not a playoff team. They're not going to make the postseason this year. So obviously they're a little bit of a tough team to gauge right now because they just don't have the same level of incentive that they usually do. But what I really want to look at here is the Indians and just how emotionally and physically drained this team is. They've got 8 or 9 relievers in the bullpen at any given time, and yet they still wind up having a tired bullpen. So, you know, we'll see how they do here at Yankee Stadium in a series I'll talk about a little bit later on in the show. Speaking of the AL Central, the Minnesota Twins split their series with the Milwaukee Brewers as the teams traded bullpen disasters in the 2 interleague games here. Ryan Harper and then Josh Hader on Tuesday. So Twins blow a lead. Hader gives it right back to him. Twins win that game. Then on Wednesday, Sergio Romo, he blows the save. Brewers pick up that win with a 3-run shot in the 8th inning. Look, the Brewers had a lot of chances with a runner in scoring position early on in that game yesterday. Couldn't get the big hits. Instead, the Twins were busy hitting solo home runs off of Gio Gonzalez. The Twins are kind of in a similar boat to the Indians in that they've played a lot of close emotional games. They've felt that pressure of the Indians catching up to them in the division, then eventually passing them on Monday for sole possession of first place by a half a game. Now the Twins back in first place by a half game. But still, you know, the Twins are not accustomed to being in this position. And really, ironically enough, neither are the Indians, because the Indians have really dominated this division over the last 3 years to the point where they haven't had to play meaningful baseball in the month of August. The Twins playing meaningful baseball in August now for the first time in a while as well. So kind of watch them a little bit here too. They do have a much easier assignment. They go down to Texas and take on the Rangers, who are not playing very good baseball right now. So an easier spot for the Twins. But again, both the Indians and the Twins playing a lot of important games here of late. Maybe we get some letdowns from both of those teams here in the near future. The Nationals swept the Reds. Trevor Bauer blasted in game 3 of that series. Wish I had stuck with my fade of Bauer. I guess I got scared off by his performance against the Cubs in his previous start. Gave up 9 runs in 4 1/3, only struck out 4. You know, the Nationals here in this series, 14 for 23 with a runner in scoring position. They were 10 for 14 in the finale yesterday as they banged out 17 runs. The Nationals bullpen did make game 1 interesting. They had a big lead, kind of gave it back, hung on for the victory. A couple of nice wins on Tuesday and Wednesday. The Nationals look strong again. You know, Juan Soto is okay. Everything came back fine with the reviews of his leg injury. As Drubal Cabrera swinging a good stick since they picked him up with a 980 OPS and a limited sample size. Nationals look good, and the Reds really don't. You know, the bullpen has gotten a lot better, or the rotation, has gotten a lot better under Wes Johnson. They have the 29th ranked FIP in terms of bullpens in the second half. They've also had some issues in the ERA department with their bullpen as well, so that's been a problem. And the starting staff, look, while they've been better, there are a lot of guys in that starting staff that do have substantial platoon splits where they're pretty good against righties and really struggle against lefties. They're a limited team right now. I mentioned that they were the highest team in second half batting average on balls in play, so the offense could probably regress a little bit as well. The Reds are in a tough spot right now, back to 7 games under .500, and I'm just not sure they'll get over the hump the rest of the way. But again, the Nationals, looking very, very strong here in this series. The Braves took the first two from the New York Mets, and my Braves' second half adjusted season win total bet looking very strong right now. Dallas Keuchel getting through six yesterday, figuring out the third time through the order penalty, a big deal for them because once again, this Atlanta bullpen, even though they've won two games here so far in this three-game set, Shane Green gives up runs. Chris Martin, Mark Melanson giving up runs. Green with a decent inning in last night's game, but again, struggling in game one. This bullpen is still a mess. They just can't get guys comfortable out there. Maybe they have to start putting Green and Melanson in some lower leverage situations, elevating guys like Newcomb back up into some higher leverage roles. Luke Jackson, same thing for him. They're trying to figure this whole thing out. Brian Snicker's trying to put it all together. But fortunately for the Braves, they've won the first two games here in this series. And as you look at this one for the Mets, I think the Mets have had their fun. I think they got back into the race. I think you commend them for that. I think they're going to kind of hit a little bit of a wall here now. And one of the big reasons why is the injury to Jeff McNeil. Led the team in F4, versatile player. He's played three different positions for pretty good sample sizes of innings so far this year. And he's been one of their better defenders overall. A 392 weighted on base average, top 15 in Major League Baseball. I know some quant guys yesterday were on the Braves, probably because, again, keep in mind that when guys are in and out of the lineup, their numbers reflect that because they've got models that spit out expected runs and things of that sort based on the lineup that's out there. Well, without McNeil, the Mets going with that Ahmed Rosario in the leadoff spot, he's got like a 319 on base percentage. That's a mistake from manager Mickey Callaway. McNeil's a big loss offensively for them. He's the table setter, the guy that gets on in front of Pete Alonso. This is a problem for them going forward. I'm fading the Mets here today. I'm backing Julio Teheran tonight against the Mets and Marcus Stroman. But I think the Mets have had their fun. I think they're a big regression candidate. I think they're a team that you want to look to fade while this McNeil injury is happening. And McNeil, a guy with a long injury history throughout his career as well. So hopefully this hamstring doesn't linger for his sake, but this could be something that does last a while for the Mets. Real quickly, one other thing I wanted to point out here from the Phillies and Cubs series. The Cubs with only three runs in this series, shut down by Jason Vargas in game one. Aaron Nola twirls a gem in game two. They were down very big, very early in that game. So maybe they kind of punted a little bit in game two, but still only scoring one run there off of Nola and the Phillies bullpen. Jose Quintana struck out 14 in game one for the Cubs. They wasted that start. Then they get shut down by Nola. We'll see what they do today against Drew Smyly. But this Cubs team, you know, once again, and really this has been the story for the NL Central in general, so much inconsistency. Just, I don't know what I'm getting from the Cubs day in and day out. I'm just not sure. Offensively, they've got so much personnel. The pitching staff is talented, but also pretty inconsistent, kind of a Jekyll and Hyde pitching staff there for Chicago. They're a hard team to back because you just don't know what you're going to get day in and day out from this team. You know, too much talent to be struggling to put teams away in the NL Central here. But, you know, then we look at these two games and we kind of understand the reasons why. All right. Something I want to talk about here today, and I'll tie this all together at the end. Best lineups against what I consider to be elite velocity of 95 plus miles per hour. So this is looking at results per Baseball Savant, per the StatCast data, on pitches of 95 plus miles per hour. The Dodgers, the best lineup in baseball at 409. That's WOBA, a 409 WOBA weighted on base average. Yankees at 378, Twins 369. How about this one? The Anaheim Angels, 356. So the Angels doing a very good job against elite velocity. File that one away in the back of your mind. Cardinals, 351 against elite velocity. They hit literally nothing else other than fastballs, but they hit velocity pretty well, a 351 WOBA in that split. And they do face Luis Castillo here this weekend. So maybe that's something where you want to look at a team total over, a game over, a first five over, something like that. But, you know, the Dodgers, Yankees, and Twins, not a big surprise at all. The Angels and Cardinals hitting velocity does surprise me a little bit. As far as the rest of the top 10 goes, the Mariners at 351, Braves at 350, Nationals 347, the Mets 346, and the Padres at 339. So the Padres, a team that does swing and miss a lot, but they swing and miss a lot on off-speed pitches and breaking balls. They will hit fastballs. They will hit high-velocity fastballs as they rank 10th in WOBA in that department. So again, best lineups against elite velocity, pitches of 95-plus miles per hour. Dodgers, Yankees, Twins, Angels, Cardinals are the top five. Mariners, Braves, Nationals, Mets, Padres, 6 through 10. The bottom five, White Sox, Blue Jays, Marlins, Reds, and Detroit Tigers. The best lineups on elite velocity of 95-plus miles per hour from right-handed pitchers only. So again, 95-plus mile per hour pitches from right-handed pitchers. Dodgers at 407, Yankees 375, Twins 364, the Angels make another appearance here at 364. And this is particularly interesting because they've got a fairly right-handed heavy lineup. They do have Shohei Ohtani, but beyond that, a lot of right-handed sticks that they're relying on to do some damage. And of course, that has been the case. They're a top 10 offense against righties, not so good against lefties. Then the Nationals at 354. The bottom five. Four of these will not surprise you. The White Sox at 257, Blue Jays at 260, Reds 287, Marlins 297. Again, elite velocity, 95-plus mile-per-hour pitches from right-handed hurlers. The bottom four, White Sox, Blue Jays, Reds, and Marlins. The other team that ranks 26th in weighted on-base average against pitches of 95-plus miles-per-hour from right-handed pitchers, the Houston Astros at 307. How about that? An elite lineup. No doubt about it. From a talent standpoint, simply elite. They are 26th in weighted on base average against right-handed pitchers on pitches of 95-plus miles per hour. And this is a very right-handed heavy Astros lineup. So that is part of the equation here. And a lot of the guys for the Astros, a lot of the right-handed batters against right-handed pitchers take kind of a right-center, opposite-field type of approach. It's harder to drive the ball that way. So this does kind of make some sense here in that a lot of times you hit for power by pulling the baseball. The Astros do like to go to right-center and right-field. A lot of their right-handed bats do like to do that. But again, this also speaks to how right-handed heavy that Astros lineup is. This is particularly relevant if the Astros run into the Indians in the playoffs. Now, do I think the Indians hit the Astros pitching staff? Hell no, not at all. But we could see a lot of low-scoring games against Clevinger, against Bieber. You know, obviously, for the rest of the rotation, they don't throw as hard. But against Clevinger and Bieber, I'd be looking for some unders in those types of matchups. So keep this in mind with the Astros here. When they face guys with elite velocity from the right side, they are not a good lineup at all. So that's definitely worth considering here as we go forward. Best lineups against elite velocity of 95-plus from left-handed pitchers. These are extremely small sample sizes here. So take this with a substantial grain of salt. They're just very, very small. The Cardinals are the best in baseball at 478, but only 38 results there. So remember, I mentioned that the Cardinals were fifth in WOBA on elite velocity, but they have a 478 WOBA against left-handed pitchers in 38 results. So that skews the numbers a little bit. It's a very small part of the sample size, but against righties, they're probably not a top five team as we just talked about. They're probably, you know, seventh or eighth, something like that. So keep that in mind. This is a small sample size, but it's probably enough to skew the data just a little bit. Dodgers at 445, once again, only 38 results there. The Mariners at 395 with 60 results. Twins, 393 with 95 results. The Yankees at 391 with 135 results. This is one of the biggest, I think it is the biggest sample size of results against elite velocity 95 plus from left-handed pitchers. So that one's probably big enough to have a little bit of oomph to it. So the Yankees, very good against elite velocity from left-handed pitchers. The teams that are not, the Pirates at 214 and 68 results, Marlins 235 and 52 results, Giants 245 and 87 results, Tigers 246 and 52 results, the A's 266 with 42 results. So again, the sample size much, much smaller here. The primary takeaway, the Yankees are very good against lefties, and the Giants aren't, with a big with a fairly decent sample size there of 87 results in play. Now, something else I want to look at here, team weighted on base average against left-handed sliders and curveballs. Pretty good sample sizes here. So these are numbers you want to keep in mind. Again, team weighted on base average against left-handed sliders and curveballs. The Astros, number one at 386. So they don't hit high velocity from righties, but they hit virtually everything else, in particular hitting lefties very well with sliders and curveballs. So if you get a left-handed pitcher against them that likes to throw a lot of sliders and curveballs, probably not going to have a lot of success in that particular matchup. Diamondbacks at 364, the A's 343. How about these last two? The Tigers at 329 and the Rangers at 323. So the Tigers and the Rangers faring pretty well against left-handed breaking stuff with those sliders and curveballs. The bottom five here, again, these are pretty decent sample sizes overall. The Reds at 235, Royals 237, Giants 244, Mets 248. And how about this one? The Chicago Cubs at 249. So the Cubs not hitting lefties well this season in terms of sliders and curveballs. So something for you to factor into the equation, and I'll tie all of this together here in a couple of minutes. Finally, Team WOBA against right-handed sliders and curveballs. Red Sox, 337. Yankees, 314. Astros, 310. Dodgers, 306. Indians, 305. The bottom five here, again, these are very big sample sizes. Padres, 249. Royals, 249. Mariners, 251. A's, 256. Reds, 256. So the A's don't hit sliders and curveballs well from right-handed pitchers. This makes sense. They're a very right-handed heavy lineup. Padres, right-handed heavy lineup. Royals, their best hitters are right-handed. Mariners, right-handed heavy lineup to a degree. A lot of their best hitters are right-handed. So what I think all of this means to me is that this may be my strategy next year. Instead of digging deep into the sabermetrics, instead of looking at things from a regression analysis standpoint, I may just look deeper into the matchups based on pitch types, play a lot of first fives. Your regression analysis, it's too finicky. And, you know, I was talking to my wife last night about the tough baseball season that I've had. And look, I'm picking at about a 50% clip, which isn't very good, especially when you're playing a lot of favorites, which is why I'm down such a decent amount for the season. But she asked me why, you know, what's not working? What's not playing out the way that I would expect it to? And as I started thinking about it and talking through it with her, you know, look, when you talk about regression analysis, right? A guy's got a 330 ERA and a 510 FIP, okay? In line for negative regression. You know it, I know it, the betting market knows it. But keep in mind that when you talk about negative regression, three earned runs over six innings is a 450 ERA. Is that a bad start? I mean, it's not great, but it's not bad. I mean, it's called a quality start for a reason, right? Well, that's going to be negative regression. With a 330 ERA and a 510 FIP, any game line with an ERA over 330 is negative regression. So in that respect, maybe I'm barking up the wrong tree. You know, a lot of these things used to work. And maybe some of these things are priced into the line. Maybe some of these things are just taken out, excuse me, by the overnight line movements that are there. But I think it's just too finicky. I think the expectation of regression is fine, but the degree of regression is completely unknown. So this year, because things haven't worked out the way that they used to, I've had to challenge myself into looking at things a little bit differently. And it's too late in the season for me to do it now with football season coming up, with all the planning that goes into that and all the additional work that goes into that. It's too hard for me to pull a complete 180 now. But I think this will be a thing next year. I think I will look a lot more into matchups based on pitch type and success on particular pitch types based on pitcher handedness. Because, I just think that regression analysis, the degrees of regression are too hard to pinpoint. So all of this stuff, team WOBA against right-handed sliders and curveballs, team WOBA against high velocity, all the numbers I just gave you, I think that's my plan for next year. And it will require some more infrastructure. It will require, doing some more research, maybe putting together some more spreadsheets, stuff like that. But I think that this is going to be a better plan of attack. Look to back lineups when they're going up against their strengths, or look to back pitchers when they're going up against lineups that don't succeed in certain types of ways. Because all this data is out there. I would like to think that smart organizations, and the majority of them are smart now when it comes to analyzing the numbers, I would think that smart organizations are going to look at these types of splits and tell their pitchers, hey, look, you're facing the Padres. You're right-handed. Typically, you're a 50% fastball guy. We want you to be a 40% fastball guy or a 35% fastball guy in this start. Attack them with sliders and curveballs. And that should be the plan of attack. That should be what teams do. So maybe that's the trick here. Maybe it's to think like you're doing a scouting report. Maybe it's to put yourself in the mind of that team, of that pitching coach, of that battery, of how we're going to attack these hitters. If you're facing the Astros and you throw 97, throw fastballs, man. Pump fastballs at that lineup. Maybe that's the way to have success when it comes to betting baseball. So I think that maybe I need to take more of a cerebral approach in terms of looking specifically at the matchup, at the personnel, and trying to figure out how these pitchers are going to attack these teams. Because I think that's exactly what they're looking at. I think that's the way that I need to look at things as well. So this will be a learning curve for me next year. But this is what I'm going to look at on a game-by-game basis. Regression analysis helps. The expectation of regression is a good starting point. But I need to piggyback that. I need to add more data to it. I need to do a little bit more. And again, looking at it from a matchup standpoint is going to be my plan of attack going forward next year. So as I mentioned in my picks and tips piece today, I gave a lot of consideration yesterday to shutting down the article. We're digging a deep hole. It's not good for me. It's not good for the site. And it's obviously not good for my readers either. I'd like to incorporate some more of this stuff. I will be looking more at these notes, running some more Baseball Savant queries as time permits. But again, with baseball season coming up, it's hard to make this complete 180-degree change. So what I'll probably end up doing is look at these teams that are really good at this, look at these teams that are really bad at this, based on the matchup that's coming up, and just have lists, have spreadsheets, have things that are out there that I can access very, very quickly. Maybe I could find someone to help me scrape this and do it from an automated standpoint. But I think that's the plan going forward, is to do more of a matchup analysis MLB handicap. Looking at strengths, looking at weaknesses, and expecting these teams that should be smart enough to interpret the data to do what needs to be done, and then hope that the pitchers execute properly. So it's going to be a complete change for me. It's going to be something completely brand new. I think it's still going to give me an edge out there in the market, because I don't think a lot of people are going to be doing it in this manner. But that's my plan for next year, and I'm going to try to incorporate some more of this the rest of the way. But this is kind of an epiphany. This is kind of a come to Joe Boo or come to Jesus, baseball Jesus moment here, where I need to change. And that's what I'm going to look to do here for the rest of this season and the upcoming season as well. All right, so down the line, let's take a look at some line movements that have happened dating back to Tuesday here. We saw some Joe Ross money hit the board for the Nationals in their matchup against the Reds. Joe Ross getting a little bit of a bump now out there in the baseball community, throwing his curveball more. He's had good success, good results with it as the Nationals have made that usage change. Jeff Zimmerman tweeted about it. Others have tweeted about it. See if Fangraphs bump sometimes from that. It was after Ross's start. We'll see if he takes some money here in his next start, which I believe comes on Sunday, if not Monday. Saw some Marlins money on Jordan Yamamoto against Dustin May. That wound up being a loser there in that one. Zach Gallen took heavy money, flipped into a favorite at Coors Field against Jeff Hoffman and the Colorado Rockies. Saw a fade of Yusei Kikuchi and the Mariners. That was against the Tigers and Matthew Boyd. Kikuchi and the Mariners, a winner in that one. Boyd knocked around again. Kikuchi much better this year against non-AL West teams, like night and day better. A huge difference there. So that was something that's kind of stood out to me a little bit. Didn't do the article on Tuesday, but maybe that would have been a play that I would have had going against Matt Boyd there with Yusei Kikuchi. But in any event, keep that in mind for Kikuchi starts against non-division teams the rest of the way. Heavy Jack Flaherty money hit the board for the Cardinals against the Royals and Glenn Sparkman. Not a big surprise there. Heavy Astros money on Zach Greinke against the Chicago White Sox. That one, once again, not a big surprise. Wednesday, we saw some heavy Robbie Ray money against Kyle Freeland, a fade of Freeland at Coors Field. Diamondbacks bullpen winds up blowing that one for everybody that was on the Arizona side. Saw some Steven Strasburg money last night against Trevor Bauer. That was clearly the correct side as the Nationals rolled to a 17-7 victory. Clayton Kershaw money drove him up into a $3 favorite roll against the Marlins and Eliezer Hernandez yesterday. Not a big surprise there in that one. Again, seeing these big favorites take money very, very often here. Again, big favorites, very profitable in Major League Baseball over the last several years. Saw some Sean Reed Foley money for the Blue Jays against Colby Allard and the Rangers. That one did not work out as the Rangers came away with the victory in that one. Wade Miley pumped up into more than a $3 favorite for the Astros against Ross Detweiler and the White Sox. That was one rare instance where a big favorite lost as the White Sox came away with that victory there in the plus 260-ish range. Heavy Marco Gonzalez money against Edwin Jackson and the Tigers yesterday. That did not work as the Tigers came away with a victory there in that one over the Mariners and left-hander Marco Gonzalez. Thursday, not a ton going on here as of yet. Seeing some Yu Darvish money kind of leak into the market against the Phillies and Drew Smyly. Saw some Marcus Stroman and Mets money early on. I disagree with it. I'm on the Braves tonight in the minus 120 range. Julio Teheran's been very, very good this year. And also the Mets without Jeff McNeil, I really worry about them offensively. Don't love Stroman with the Mets and that poor defense. So give me the Braves tonight as one of my plays. Some heavy Alex Young money on the Diamondbacks against the Giants and Derek Rodriguez. I'm on the first five in that one. I have no interest in backing the Diamondbacks bullpen. Wanted a first five run line, but I had to get the article and the show going. I'm sure the first five run line is out there now. I talked about minus 155 for the money line in the article. First five run line may be a little bit better. It's going to reduce the juice, but I do like Alex Young and I don't like Derek Rodriguez in that matchup. Otherwise, pretty quiet Thursday out there in the betting market thus far. All right, bunch of series to talk about here as we head on into the weekend. We start with the Indians and the Yankees. Adam Plutko, Chad Green in the first one. Aaron Civale, Masahiro Tanaka in the second one. Zach Plesac, James Paxton on Saturday. Mike Clevinger, CC Sabathia on Sunday. The Indians, a little bit tired with that schedule. You got a fly ball guy in Plutko getting the start here tonight. That concerns me quite a bit. And then command guys with maybe a lower margin for error in Aaron Civale and Zach Plesac on Friday and Saturday. I do like Tanaka a little bit on Friday night with his splitter. The Indians have not hit changeups well all year long. So I like Tanaka a little bit against Civale there on Friday. But of course, we'll see what that price looks like in that one. The Astros and the A's. You got Anibal Sanchez, Mike Fiers tonight. Got a piece of that one. Check out my tips and my picks and tips piece over at bangthebook.com to find out what that play is. Verlander and Roark on Friday. To be determined at Chris Bassett on Saturday. Zach Greinke, Brett Anderson on Sunday. Garrett Cole on the shelf for the time being, but the Astros in a great position to give him some time, let him heal up. This is a tough series for the A's, though. Sanchez, Verlander, Greinke, all great off-speed stuff from the right-hand side. Verlander with that elite velocity as well. This is a tough matchup for Oakland. I would not be surprised if the Astros take 3 out of 4 at a minimum in this series. So we'll see if these are too prohibitive from a price standpoint, but I do like the Astros in several of these games here in this series. Cardinals and the Reds. Michael Wacha, Sonny Gray tonight. Adam Wainwright, Luis Castillo tomorrow. Miles Mikolas, Anthony DeSclafani on Saturday. Jack Flaherty, Alex Wood on Sunday. Cardinals getting 3 right-handed pitchers in the first 3 games that can shut down their right-handed heavy lineup. They get a lefty on Sunday in Alex Wood. Jack Flaherty has been great of late. That'll be an overnight line mover there on the Cardinals on Sunday with Flaherty taking money against the lefty in Alex Wood. So maybe get out in front of that one is what I would recommend. Miles Mikolas has been better of late, so we'll see. You know, the Reds coming off of that sweep against the Nationals didn't play particularly well. Let's see what they do against the Cardinals here in this series. Brewers and the Nationals. Adrian Hauser, Patrick Corbin on Friday. Jordan Lyles, Anibal Sanchez Saturday. Chase Anderson, Eric Fetty on Sunday. Chase Anderson's been great here of late. I may look to play Milwaukee on Sunday. We'll see how much bullpen usage they have in the first 2 games of this series. Lyles versus Sanchez is pretty intriguing. Not a whole lot here on Friday night, but again, we'll see what Sunday sets up looking like for that series. Dodgers and the Braves. And man, we got some good series here this weekend. Kenta Maeda, Mike Soroka Friday. Hyunjin Ryu, Mike Foltynewicz Saturday. Dustin May, Max Fried on Sunday. Shame on Major League Baseball, because on Sunday Night Baseball, the Cubs and the Pirates, nobody wants to see that. But as far as this series goes, you know, a big spot here for Mike Foltynewicz. Obviously, we'll see how he does against a very good lineup. Kenta Maeda has struggled here of late. Dustin May and Max Fried looks like an under game on Sunday, perhaps. Dodgers 40 games over 500 now, heading into Thursday's action. Finally, the Padres and the Phillies. Chris Paddock, Vince Velasquez Friday. Nelson Lamet, Zach Eflin Saturday. Joey Lucchesi, Justin Vargas on Sunday. Padres getting a lefty on Sunday, so that's a decent spot for them. A Lucchesi on the bump for them. Nelson Lamet's team probably comes on Saturday. The Padres do avoid Aaron Nola. Wonder if the first 5 is a good look. First five under, on Friday night with Paddock and Velasquez. Velasquez pitching a little bit better here of late. Right-handed heavy Padres lineup. He's terrible against lefties. So maybe the first 5 under a consideration here for Friday. Lots of stuff on today's show. Adam@bangthebook.com via email to sign up for the notes for the program. I think I sent out Mondays. If I didn't, I will do that with the notes for today's show. But again, talked about a lot of stuff. Great weekend of baseball and also some food for thought on how I'm going to change my personal handicapping. UFC with Christian Pina on Friday. Bettors Box and Kyle Hunter on Monday. Brian Blessing, Rolf Michaels on Tuesday. We'll figure out the rest of the schedule as we get closer to the return of the daily shows of Bang the Book Radio. That'll do it for me. Thank you so much for listening, everybody. And remember that you'll never strike out when you're in the Bettors Box.